Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Seth, I think it's safe to say that when teams feel like they found a franchise quarterback, you know, when they feel like in year two or year three, like, okay, this is our guy and we're ready to commit to him, I think most teams feel like we hope to get this guy for a decade plus at least, especially when you see some of the prominent franchise quarterbacks like Breeze and Brady, Philip Rivers, Aaron Rodgers. I guess Matthew Stafford's starting to creep into that conversation as well. He's in his early 30s. Guys like that that are still playing at a high level in their 30s, in the case of Brady and Breeze, into their 40s. Like, a decade is not too much to ask out of a franchise quarterback, right?
I guess.
And I'm going somewhere with this.
No, not too much to ask at all, no.
Right. So earlier this week, Cam Newton was released by the Carolina Panthers. And Cam Newton was drafted in 2011. And it got me thinking, because Newton was the number one overall pick in 2011, less than a decade ago. And I'm sure in 2015, the Panthers thought this is going to be our guy for a long, long time. Andrew Luck was the number one pick the following year. He's not even in football anymore. He's not even 30 years old yet. He's out of the sport. And it just got me thinking, like, man, forget about the old guard of all the guys I just named that were drafted in the previous decade. In this new decade that we're in, starting in 2010, we're in a new decade now in 2020, but in the decade from 2010 to 2019, now that Newton is probably going to be a backup or at least a very sketchy, oft-injured starter, Andrew Luck's out of the game, I started thinking to myself, man, how many guys drafted from 2010 through 2019 do we feel like are guys that are for sure, surefire, decade-long franchise quarterbacks? And you start to go through the ones, forget about the ones that are busts or that are retired or that are out of football. The ones that are still around that were drafted within the last 10 years, most of them aren't even guys like that anymore and may have been thought to at one time. In 2011, Seth, Cam Newton, Andy Dalton drafted that year. Dalton is on the verge of being out in Cincinnati. In 2012, it took Ryan Tannehill, Nick Foles, and Kirk Cousins to go to different teams before they maybe became that level of guy. And Foles is a backup again now. You know, Cousins is probably a ceiling on him. And then Tannehill is, we'll see if he regresses or not. The only one out of 2012, I would say for sure, is that guy, is Russell Wilson. And then you start to get into this territory. I mean, there's no quarterbacks left from 2013 at all. 2014, the guys that are prominent, Teddy Bridgewater, Derek Carr, Jimmy Garoppolo, all good guys, but not at that level of complete franchise guy. Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota in 2015, they're both on different teams or about to be. 2016, Jared Goff and Carson Wentz were the number one and two picks. They're both on their second contract, but they both underperformed last year. Now, Dak Prescott was in that draft, and he's interesting. But then we start to get into, then the next year is the year Deshaun was drafted. And I think people feel that way about Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. But I guess the point that I'm making here, and that I'm looking to get your reaction to, is, man, I mean, 5 years ago, we were probably talking about a whole lot more guys than what we're talking about right now from 2011 and 2012 with Newton and Dalton, hell, even Kaepernick from that draft. And then in 2012 with Luck and Russell Wilson. Man, Mahomes and Watson are really the only two from this new age that you feel that way about. But if history is telling us anything, especially with recently with Cam Newton, is that these guys, as hard as we think they are to find, when I lay it out that way, it feels like they're even harder to find.
I don't know. I think that there was kind of a disconnect between the college game and the NFL game for about a decade, where the college game became so spread heavy and focused on that, that a different type of quarterback emerged. While the NFL was still looking for old school quarterbacks, like, yeah, give me a guy that can run a 5'2", 40, 6'5", could throw a football over that thar barn off in the distance. Like, that's what the NFL was still looking for while the college game was changing and not producing those kinds of quarterbacks anymore. So I think I'm not taking anything away from like incredible talent that Pat Mahomes has or anything that Deshaun Watson does. But I also don't think that those guys necessarily would have emerged as quickly and as clearly in a bygone era of college football. So I think there's something where college and the NFL are now more on the same page. The NFL finally realized, okay, wow, we have to adapt to the college game because these are the NFL quarterbacks. These are the quarterbacks that were being given. We got to start going after different types of guys. So I think that, and then the way the game has changed too, to where in some respects it's a little bit easier to play quarterback now than it was 10, 15 years ago. I think you're going to start to see it. I think you're going to start to see more teams not necessarily be stuck in quarterback purgatory, but that also does mean that teams won't necessarily feel like they have to stick it out with the same guy, that there's only one chance at it, that this is our one chance to win a Super Bowl, so we got to throw all our eggs into this basket. I think that look at two of those guys you mentioned, Dak Prescott and Russell Wilson. Those guys are mid-round draft picks. You know, those yep. are – I think there's a sense that you can – it's easier to find a quarterback than it used to be.
That's a really good point about the way the game is changing, because as I look at my list here – obviously, 2018 and 2019, the list is longer because it's just we don't know much about these guys yet, you know, so there's more guys that are potentially in the pool of future franchise quarterbacks. But to your point, Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray were the number one overall picks in 2018 and 2019. No chance that back in that gap that we're looking at between, say, 2012 and 2017, where it's really kind of sketchy in terms of the guys who are truly franchise quarterbacks. Zero chance those guys get drafted in the first round back then, let alone get drafted number one overall. That's a really, and Lamar Jackson being the MVP of the league, you know, he got drafted 32nd overall in 2018. So there were still some glitches in the college game that people were trying to get over. That's a really good point by you on this.
It's kind of like if you think about old school centers in the NBA, like at what point, when was the last time an old school center that, you know, that was built to back people up at the rim and whatnot went number one overall or top five in the NBA draft versus a Euro center? It took a while for the league to kind of figure out where the game was going. I think the NFL's done that with quarterbacks, and the big arm guy that can't run is not what they're looking for anymore.
Let me follow up on something with you on that with respect to the 2018 class. We know Mahomes and Watson are going to get big deals here at some point. I think 3 years ago when Winston and Mariota were coming off of their second seasons in the league, we all just sort of assumed that they were going to get second contracts at some point because they weren't busts. They had shown enough, and you figure, well, they're going to grow at some point here as players. The fact of the matter is neither of them really did grow as players over the next two or three years. And if anything, Mariota got more banged up and so forth. Let me ask you this. Of the four starting quarterbacks from the first round of 2018, Mayfield, Darnold, Josh Allen, and Lamar Jackson, are those guys all locks to get second contracts from the teams that they're with right now?
Oh boy, Mayfield should be. I feel like with Stefanski in charge and with some of the improvements that they've made, that I'd feel a whole lot more confident about him if I were a Browns fan than I was before. I got lost here, Sean. Sam Darnold, no, I don't feel confident in that. Lamar Jackson, Josh. Yes, I feel confident in Lamar Jackson. Josh Allen, I wouldn't feel so confident about. I feel like, they've gotten Stephon Diggs. They're going to do everything they can to find out whether he's capable. But I would expect that within a year or two, his accuracy issues are just not going to be camouflaged, and that they start thinking about who's the next guy behind Josh Allen.
Is injury the only thing that keeps Lamar Jackson from getting a big deal a year from now?
I would imagine so, because I think that they're fully committed to building an offense around him and doing everything they can. Because look, Lamar Jackson has accuracy issues too. The difference is I think he's got a coach that's really, really bright about figuring out how to work with those accuracy issues and getting like really focusing on Lamar Jackson's strengths and building around those. So we'll see. I mean, at some point he's going to have some kind of success in the playoffs, but
right.
I think that, yeah, they're so committed to him and building around him that I think that, and I think he's going to continue to have extreme regular season success because there are physical mismatches that offense has that over the course of a regular season, they're just going to steamroll some teams. So yeah, he's going to be there for a while as long as he's healthy.
I think the thing that scares me the most, Seth, in terms of the exercise you and I just went through here and looking at sort of the recent quarterback history when it comes to Deshaun, is that Newton and Luck, by and large, wound up not being decade-long guys for their teams because of the pounding that they took. And we know that Deshaun has taken, in some respects, taken an historic pounding over the last couple of years because of the offensive line. Now, I think the offensive line is better. But just as a follow-up on Deshaun, what scares you more for Deshaun in terms of the future? O'Brien and what he's doing in terms of this, O'Brien slash Easterby, I guess, in terms of this weird roster construction culture that they're doing right now, or the physical pounding that he's taking?
I think the physical pounding. But part of that is, okay, are they going to build an offense around him where he has easy options early in the down? Because then he can avoid some of the physical pounding. He's made progress in terms of getting rid of the ball quickly. And I think partly because Tim Kelly and Bill O'Brien did some things this year, especially after the Carolina game, to get rid of the ball quickly. It's just got to be more of a complete and total picture. And that's where the two are almost combined. You know, it's a combination of Can Bill O'Brien both provide him an offense and work with him on really becoming a guy that's not taking undue physical risks, and subsequently him staying healthy. Because that, man, that pinball play in the playoffs was as incredible as it was. And you can't be playing dice with your body like that. You know,
No, it's terrifying. The NFL schedule doesn't come out until April. If it even does come out, we'll see if that's something else that they push back. I can tell you right now that if we go on with a regular 17 game season, I can tell you right now who the Texans are going to play in week one. I'll tell you who it is next. I was listening to Texans All Access last night as Amy and I were driving back from Fajita Pete's. That was our takeout last night, Seth. Fajita Pete's.
Yep.
Supporter of the station, although we went to the Pearland location. We didn't go to the Copperfield one, which is where our guy Mike and Cy Fair runs the show up there. But we did tag him on it to remind people to support them up on the northwest side because Fajita Pete's has been a great partner to the station. So I'm listening to Texans All Access.
Yeah, Mike and Cy Fair's son has designed a couple of logos for us, by the way.
Are they done?
Yeah, he's going to email them to me.
Okay. Cool. I can't wait to see them. We need a logo.
So
that'd
be good.
I'll put
those out online. Yeah, one of them's kind of cool. Yeah. It's like a football-shaped. It's a football fashioned with, like, our names. I got to tell you, my font for Payne is a lot bigger, but it's only because Pendergast has so many letters. So I don't want you to get offended by how much bigger my name is on this football.
Whatever. Just the next thing in line. It's Payne and Pendergast. You go first, and you got a bigger name. My son likes you more than he likes me. It's really a real great existence I've carved out here for myself. So I'll credit John Harris with this. They got talking sort of stream of conscience style, he and Mark Vandermeer did, about next season, about the upcoming season, assuming that the season itself starts on time. I think there's no doubt that the off-season activities are going to be impacted by the coronavirus pandemic. Hopefully the season starts on time or close to it in early September. Maybe they push back a little bit and they run the same schedule, but the season goes into mid-February instead of early February. We shall see. But they kind of started talking about this the first week of the season and arrived at this. And Seth, as we know, the Texans, we know who all the opponents are for all these teams. We just don't know when the games are going to be played. But the other thing that we know is that in most seasons, last year being an exception because it was the 100th season and they started the year with Green Bay and Chicago, two original teams, in most seasons, the Super Bowl champion hosts the opening game on Thursday night of week one. So the Texans are one of the Kansas City Chiefs' eight home opponents this season. I'm going to go through their 8 home opponents. And Seth, you tell me, if you were running NBC, who carries that Thursday night game to start the season, which opponent would you choose to place in a game against Kansas City in week 1 of the regular season? Okay, here we go.
I'll give you my reaction to each one as you read it.
Okay. Sounds good. Las Vegas Raiders.
Derek Carr, no thank you. So we can throw the ball away on fourth down in the fourth quarter? No, no. Now that's okay. Not the ending you want.
Gotcha. Number 2, Los Angeles Chargers.
Tyrod Taylor, so you can run out of bounds on fourth down in the fourth quarter? No, no thank you.
Okay. Denver Broncos.
Denver Broncos. Look, just because the last great game that Drew Lock will ever have was against the Houston Texans. We're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs anyway. So that boy, okay, now it's Denver versus Kansas City. Old school rivalries. Denver's bolstered their team in free agency somewhat, but you don't have the intrigue of quarterbacks of the eventual matchup that I'm thinking of.
Right.
So no.
Okay. Well, maybe we can say Denver's the leader in the clubhouse right now of the teams that I've read so far.
Just because Carolina of a historical Panthers. Rivalry. Carolina
right,
Panthers,
right, right.
Interesting. A lot of people, because this all boils down to quarterbacks at some point. I don't think that Bridgewater has quite the cachet of Deshaun Watson at this point, so no. And plus, it's interconference. It's not as exciting as a intra-conference game.
And so the next one on the list is the Atlanta Falcons. Is it safe to assume you feel the same way about that one?
Yeah, you got quarterback intrigue there. But Atlanta, a lot of people don't realize that Atlanta made a push in the second half of the season. All they remember was that Atlanta was an abysmal mess and that the coach was definitely going to get fired early on in that season. So I don't think Atlanta's got any kind of ring to it right now.
Yeah, their 6-2 finish to the season was about as off the grid as you could get because of how they started, to your point. Yeah. 3 more. The New England Patriots.
Look, the New England Patriots, if there's one thing that we know about the Patriots, is that Bill Belichick has struggled to find quarterbacks. Whether it comes from the benching of Bernie Kosar to, just sticking with Drew Bledsoe for that first year for a while. I think that the one guy he's ever found was Tom Brady. And that's his track record. He found Tom Brady. He's found nobody else. I don't think that Jared Stidham is going to be Tom Brady. I'll go out on that limb. And I'll say no. There's no intrigue at quarterback right now.
New York Jets.
No, it's the Jets.
Yeah.
You can't put the Jets on prime time for the first game of the season. There's too much of a chance of an abject disaster. No.
All right. The last one, the Houston Texans.
Yeah, I think that's definitely it. I think that now the problem is they don't want a repeat of that playoff game. Like, if you're setting the schedule, you want that first game to be a genuinely good game. Have the Texans improved their defense enough yet that you don't think this is going to turn into a boat race for the Kansas City Chiefs? And I don't think they have, right? And it's unlikely that they're going to do anything in the draft that makes people feel differently about that. I think the quarterback versus quarterback matchup is intriguing, but Deshaun didn't have a great game in that Kansas City Chiefs playoff game, and the defense certainly didn't have a good game either. I love the Mahomes versus Watson head-to-head, but I don't know if the league sees it as such a slam dunk.
Well, it's all about what's sellable, and to me, Seth, there's only 2 sellable options out of all of those opponents. It's you can sell me on Bill Belichick's first game post-Tom Brady on national TV going against the Super Bowl champs. I can be sold on that. Whoever starts at court, whether it's Hoyer or Jared Stidham or whoever, maybe they sign somebody, regardless of who it is at quarterback, I can be sold on watching the first game of the post-Brady era on Thursday night. Look, I'm going to watch this game regardless of who it is, but I'm talking in terms of getting the average fan to buy in for 3 hours of watching it. I can buy into that, and the only other one is Deshaun Watson versus Patrick Mahomes. That's the only other one. And there, I wonder if there's part of the thinking of the league, Seth. We know how the league in general feels about the Patriots, right? I mean, they're a bit of a villain to the league office with all the gates and things like that. I wonder if there's a part of the league office that feels like, man, how great would it be to, because they took a lot of hits on defense, the Patriots did too. It's not just Brady leaving. They lost some pieces defensively as well. I wonder if there's a part of the league that's like, you know what, let's feed that bastard Belichick on opening night to the Kansas City Chiefs offense that averages 40 points a game.
I think it would get great ratings if it did work out that way too, wouldn't it? If it, I think people would hate watch all the way through the fourth quarter if the Patriots were getting destroyed. The thing is, I mean, the Patriots took some hits on defense, but I still think it's going to be a reasonably good defense, but without potentially any kind of offense on the other side to make up for it. Because say what you want about Tom Brady, the problem with that offense was that he didn't have a whole lot of weapons. You know, it could have been a much better, whether you think Tom Brady has lost it or not, it obviously would have been a better offense. So it's going to be a worse offense this year without Tom Brady, unless Jarrett Stidham really gets it, unless there's really something to Jarrett Stidham. Yeah, I would hate watch that. If the Chiefs were going to beat the Patriots by 28 points, I would stay watching through the fourth quarter just for the images of Bill Belichick on the sideline. Like they'll focus in on zoom in on him. The next day, all the talk will be like, well, is this it for Bill Belichick? Is that it? What's the over-under on number of years Belichick has left? That would be a glorious day for the NFL in owning the news cycle, because that's all that people will talk about for a full week until the Patriots have a chance to play again. That's the other thing. It gives you a full 10 days to talk about the Patriots until they play again.
Yes. Yeah, I think two things here. One, actually three. One, I think if it's about quarterbacks, it's a no-brainer. It's Watson and Mahomes. Two, you're absolutely right. The Patriots give you way more potential content and storyline coming out of it. Three, Seth, as just someone who roots for the Texans, I want no part of Kansas City in prime time in week one. Hell no.
That's exactly the question I was going to ask you.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me week seven at noon. You know what I'm saying? Like, give me week seven Sunday at noon. I want no part of Kansas City on. Give me exactly what the Texans had in 2019. Week six, noon start, buried in the middle of the schedule somewhere. Give me that. I want no part of the post-Hopkins era on national TV. Although there are a lot of Texan fans who probably be like, yeah, bring it on, because if they get destroyed by four touchdowns, we're 1/16th of the way to getting Bill O'Brien out of here. That's how some fans probably look at it.
You know what I want for week one that would be fun? That I think it would be a name. It would be a game that would have a lot of cachet to it, and it would be exciting for certain reasons, but the Texans should have a really good chance of winning. It's the Cincinnati Bengals, because maybe Joe Burrow is starting in that game. The Bengals come into NRG. It doesn't tend to go well for the Bengals when they come into NRG. So you got that number one overall draft pick. Most likely, he's going to start off slow, no matter how great you are. Let's remember Peyton Manning had a horrible first year. He'll probably start off kind of slow. The Texans will be a good team to cut their teeth on for 2020, but have a reasonable chance of winning, but also have a whole lot of kind of, there'll be a lot of, the game will pop because of Joe Burrow.
Well, that'll be certainly a lower degree of difficulty than what they've been fed the last two seasons in the season opener. Last season, they had to go to New Orleans on Monday night, which a game they should have won. And then two seasons ago, they had to go to New England and play in week one. That was a game where Lamar Miller and Deshaun Watson fumbled on the first snap of the game, and they spent 60 minutes paddling upstream trying to get back in the game after that. So that would certainly be your scenario. I love your scenario from a degree of difficulty standpoint, for sure.
It also felt like the Texans didn't run a genuine zone read for the next 8 weeks because of that fumble.
Yeah.
Like every time they gave a zone read look, it was just window dressing. There was no actual read or option to it. It was just, they tried to make it look like that. That's true. That one single play right there, I think, freaked Bill O'Brien out so much that it kind of halted the development of the offense.
So you're a programmer then, Seth. Is it New England or is it Houston that you program against the Chiefs on Thursday night to open the season?
I was, as a programmer, I program the Patriots versus the Chiefs. And as a fan of the Texans, I program the Patriots versus the Chiefs. I got to give Anthony Weaver. Look, I like Anthony Weaver. I want him to have some success. I don't want his first test as defensive coordinator to be Pat Mahomes and the Super Bowl defending champion Kansas City Chiefs. Okay? Like give Weaver some time to work with some of these younger defensive backs, Lonnie Johnson to come along and start to come into his own in his second year. Give me some of that. Don't just throw him right out there to the wolves immediately. Like some sawed-off carcass thrown to Joe Exotic's lions or something. I don't need that.
Yes. Yes. Tiger King references. I'm here for that. All right. If you want to listen to the station, however you're listening to it right now, Just know that there are several ways you can still listen to Sports Radio 610. Obviously, if you're driving around, you can listen on your radio, but we know so many of you are cooped up in the house. Radio.com app, where you can rewind to the beginning of the show so you can sleep in and still hear the whole show and just catch up to us in real time. Smart speakers, tell Alexa or Google to play Sports Radio 610, and you can stream live at sportsradio610.com. Final segment coming up. Andre Johnson was trending last night on Twitter. Why? We will tell you next. So yesterday, Seth, your former teammate, Andre Johnson, was trending on Twitter in the afternoon. And as it turned out, it was because Stephon Diggs, who was just recently traded from the Minnesota Vikings to the Buffalo Bills, maybe this is his audition to be a producer for one of the debate shows on ESPN or FS1 someday. He just tweeted out at 11 a.m. yesterday, top five wideouts to ever play the game, go. And it got a lot of traction. And Andre Johnson's name was obviously one that was mixed in, and certainly within the radar that I have on Twitter, a lot of the people that I follow on Twitter and that follow me back are going to be mixing Andre Johnson's name in, because my follower constituency, as yours does probably, has a decided Houston slant to it. But I'm wondering, I didn't want to debate the top five wideouts in the game with you necessarily, unless you're up for it. It was intriguing to me only because it did get a lot of traction on Twitter yesterday. And I'm wondering if with the pandemic, now that people can't go to bars and restaurants and places where conversations like this would normally take place with four or five of your buddies over several beers, where you're just debating stuff like that, I do wonder if this is going to be something where it gets augmented on social media, where people have that void that needs to be filled just for that sort of barroom discussion that takes place sometimes within sports, and that there's no actual games being played too. I wonder if we're going to start to see a lot of this stuff come across our radar on social media.
I don't know. I think people get in these arguments all the time. I think it just more stands out that this is the only thing that's going to be, that's the only thing that people are talking about. Like this time of year, people might be talking about today, say opening day of the baseball season, or they might be discussing the draft and or what have you, which we can still discuss the draft because it's coming up. Obviously you'd be getting into crunch time for the NBA playoffs about to begin. You'd be talking about all that. Well, people are also still having arguments about who the top five wide receivers are. But yeah, now it's like the only thing going on. So I was curious why Andre was trending necessarily, because I didn't think that he would be as hotly contested an item. And I think it's because the way the algorithm works, that it's just locally. Like, I don't think there's a lot of people like in the national media that put Andre in their top five, are there?
No. Okay. I think Andre was a tremendous player. Don't get me wrong. I think his Hall of Fame case is going to be borderline, just because it's going to start to get, we're going to start to get a logjam at that position. So I hope he gets in. It would be awesome. I love Andre Johnson. I think he was a great player and a great ambassador for the team. But I think he's borderline when it comes to getting into the Hall of Fame, which means by definition, he's not one of my top five wide receivers, but I think he's great.
You know, it's tough. And it's kind of like when they were going over those top 100 players ever, you look at some of the players from the 1940s and 50s and 60s, and you watch him run and you're like, this looks so slow. And that's after even accounting for the fact that some of those super old time videos are sped up to begin with. Like, oh my gosh, it's hard to separate the fact that athletically those guys weren't trained as well. Like they were working at meat packing plants in the off season a lot of times, or like substitute teachers in the off season. It's hard to reconcile the greatness of those players with how modern athletes are. So you look at some of them, you know, even there's the one guy I felt has the strongest case for being the best wide receiver ever is Don Hutson. And the only thing I know about him is that he had 99 touchdowns between 1935 and 1945, where I didn't like the forward pass was barely employed back then. And this guy somehow had the 11th most touchdowns. I don't even know if he's actually a wide receiver, but I think that he was a split end and a safety. So, yeah, that's what they called the receivers back then, a split end.
Yeah, two-way player.
So, look, yeah, if you put Andre Johnson back in the days of Don Hutson, Andre would have just destroyed the entire league. But in the modern era, I think he's just too far down the list on touchdowns. You know, Larry Fitzgerald has about 50 more touchdowns than Andre does at this point.
Yeah. Who was the wide receiver that in your 10 years, so 1997 through 2006, when you were in defensive meetings and you're going through your game plan and you're sensing, or maybe the coach is even outright saying, this guy's a problem, this guy's a headache, who was the wide receiver that through all of your preparations for games and things like that? And yours is obviously going to be probably more skewed to the AFC because you played for two AFC teams. But I'm just curious from through your eyes, who was the wide receiver that you felt the coaches that you played for saw as the biggest problem when you were in the
league? I don't know about the coaches, but I know the only time I ever saw a player openly like chicken out of a game was because we were facing Randy Moss. Like there was a defensive back who had an ankle issue and he flat out said, like, I'm not going out there against Randy Moss with my ankle 75%. Like I'm not going to be your sports center. I'm not going to be bullied by sports center all week long. Like I was like, wow, he's just outright saying it, isn't he? It was, I think it was an ankle injury that like maybe he normally would have played through, but he wasn't going to go out and do it versus Randy Moss. I think that was Moss. Randy Moss was just that guy that, just like with DeAndre Hopkins, has the same effect. Now, Randy's just a more impressive physical specimen than DeAndre Hopkins, but that a defensive back can have him completely covered and it doesn't matter. Like, you can play perfect coverage versus Randy Moss and it doesn't matter. He still out-muscles you for a 60-yard reception, you know? And at the end of the day, like, maybe you cover Randy Moss perfectly, but he still has 150 yards receiving.
Jerry Rice is always going to be viewed as the greatest receiver ever because he was great and he put up huge numbers and he was on a bunch of Super Bowl winning teams. But if you're asking me who the best wide receiver in terms of when he was at his best, who the best wide receiver in the history of football is, to me, it's absolutely Randy Moss. Like Randy Moss, peak Randy Moss is better than any receiver that's ever played the game. And he's an amazing athlete. I don't know if you ever saw the 30 for 30 about Randy Moss, which is a really good 30 for 30 about his upbringing in Rand, West Virginia. But he was a phenomenal basketball player too. Like he was thought of somebody, if he had focused on basketball, he could have been an NBA player. He was that
well,
good.
Well, he and White Chocolate there were on the same team in high school.
Yeah. Jason Williams. Yep.
Jason Williams. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That must've been incredible, especially in West Virginia. My gosh.
Yeah. Yeah, Randy Moss and Jason Williams, really good 30 for 30. I forget what the name of it was, but just Google it. You'll find it. So that got people going yesterday. My guess is we're going to start to see a lot of top five kind of stuff. It was another wide receiver sending it out made it interesting to me. I don't know that Diggs ever put his five up, but we'll, you know, at any rate,
we'll find it. You mentioned things that you could be streaming right now because I think 30 for 30 probably has some kind of deal on what you can stream. Just like PBS is letting you stream baseball, the Ken Burns documentary for free.
Yeah,
I think I saw this in The Athletic yesterday. It was what to watch on streaming services, the football edition. It's top pick for Netflix was Last Chance U. I might have to get into this because I see people talk about it enough. And it's this East Mississippi Community College where And JUCOs are always super interesting because they're guys that, for whatever reason, a lot of times are Division 1A talent that just either because of academic issues or criminal issues or whatever else, they don't get those scholarships. So they're guys that are there for 2 years, you know, or 1 year sometimes. They're just trying to transfer. So it's cutthroat as hell and hardcore. Like I've heard stories about what it's like at some of these competitive JUCOs. I'm going to have to go watch Last Chance U and see what it's like.
It sounds like
prison rules in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Seth, I'm with you. I haven't seen it yet. I've seen a lot of people talk about it. That's the thing about JUCOs. There's always something with a JUCO player, right? There's always a reason that they're there. And the reason we know this is that nobody ever sits down on signing day at a table with five hats and it's Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, Oklahoma, and a Pawhuska, Oklahoma Community College, right? Like nobody's ever choosing right out of high school to go to a junior college because it's amazing to go to a junior college. To your point, it's either academics, It's often criminal stuff. It can be things like guys just wanting to stay sharp for a year because they're not allowed to go to another Division I school. That's what Jarrett Stidham, I think, went to Blinn Junior College, if I'm not mistaken, in between his year at Baylor and going to Auburn. He played at JUCO for a year. So it's not always, you know, it's not always for negative reasons. Sometimes it's just reasons that, you know, just circumstance that does it, but it's never by choice. You know, and I shouldn't say it's never by choice. They obviously choose which one they go to, but usually junior college is thrust upon people as opposed to people going, hell yeah, can't wait to get to JUCO.
Yeah. You know, the other thing too, sometimes at some of the FCS schools, the old 1AA, you'll have coaches that have a lot of success. And I've wondered, like, why doesn't this coach get a shot somewhere else? Then I'll look at their roster. I did this with a team a couple years ago, and I was like, oh, he has several guys on his roster who were kicked out of Baylor. Okay.
Right.
Well, I guess you can get away with that. In a program where there's not a whole lot of scrutiny, but like these guys were kicked out of Baylor pre-scandal, which is, it's hard. It was, I don't know if anybody was paying attention. It was hard to get kicked out of Baylor. So there's that. Some of the other football movies on Netflix right now.
Ooh, yeah. A good slew of them. Yeah.
The Waterboy,
of course.
Rudy, that's on Netflix right now.
Have you seen The Longest Yard?
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask you. Just as you go through these, let me know. Have you seen these? Have you seen The Waterboy? Have you seen Rudy? Or these things? Are you adding them to your list, or are they just on this list?
I've seen The Waterboy. I'll probably watch that again just because I've watched it a ton of times. I despised. Yeah. The movie Rudy, that Sean Astin character annoys the hell out. Real life Rudy, maybe he was awesome. That kid annoyed the hell out of me. I couldn't stand that Sean Astin. When he started reciting that Mary, Mary, quite contrary poem.
We need that audio.
I'm like, this is the creepiest kid alive. What the hell? Right. Why is there a movie about this kid?
I forgot.
That's not even a bad pickup line. Yeah, you look like you're trying to, like, abduct somebody. What the hell are you doing, Mary, Mary, quite contrary? Oh, my gosh. Killer Inside the Mind of Aaron Hernandez. I can't remember if – I think there's two different Aaron Hernandez documentaries out right now. I really enjoyed the one I did watch. A lot of revelations on there. I don't know if this is the same one or not, but whichever one's on Netflix right now, that's worth checking out.
Killer Inside – okay, is the one you watched the one that came out recently, like within the last month or so? It was in three parts.
I thought they came out like simultaneously. So
They may have been dropped simultaneously, but there were three episodes to it. You know, like all these Netflix things, they drop a whole season of it at once and you binge your way through it.
Okay. Because there was another one also. There was also a completely separate Aaron Hernandez documentary streamed somewhere.
There was. Like, yeah, no, Killer Inside.
I think on HBO.
Yeah, Killer Inside is the one that came out within the last like month or two.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the other ones, I don't know what these ones are. Coach Snoop. Do you know what Coach Snoop is?
Oh, I think that's about Snoop Dogg. He was
coaching his
son and his other. He coached like a Pop Warner or maybe like a junior high football team in L.A.
Yeah, I want to see that. And then there's also, okay, let's see. Let's go down to Hulu. Frankly, this is not a strong selling point for Hulu. This doesn't make me want to go out. These are their top football offerings. Hard Knocks Oakland Raiders. All right. Go Tigers, which is Last Chance U, basically. But it's the story of the Massillon Tigers, a high school football team whose town.
Oh,
that's not Last Chance U at all. That's like Massillon Tigers. That's like a deep and storied high school program. Okay.
Yeah.
And then they also have available, if this doesn't sell you on Hulu, I don't know what will. Harvard beats Yale 29-29, a documentary.
How many times are you going to watch that, Seth?
There's a documentary about Victor Cruz, apparently, which I'm kind of curious. That's an odd story, like Victor Cruz, who went from so great to like after that injury, just not being the same guy ever again. And Gridiron Gang, a movie starring The Rock. I don't remember that one.
Did you ever see it? Did you ever see Gridiron Gang? Not bad.
Is it a kids movie?
No, it's not. Even though it sounds like it, no, it's not at all. I think it's based on a true story, if I'm not mistaken, where The Rock is like the warden, or he's in some position of authority over a juvenile detention center, and he starts up a football program that leads to a lot of the kids developing life skills and things like that. It's a feel-good story. It's a very edgy feel-good story, but it's a good movie. Better than the other Rock football movie where he played the father of a daughter that was dropped on his front door. I forget what that was. That The Game Plan, I think.
Yeah,
I can't remember. Yeah. That was more of a comedy. Yeah, but no. Gridiron Gang, not a bad movie. That was $9 well spent back at the theater whenever I saw it.
Amazon Prime has All or Nothing, that whole series. I think Philadelphia has done it. I think the Panthers did it. I'm not sure. That's kind of like the Amazon Prime version of Hard Knocks, except they actually follow through the season. So there's
right,
that.
Right.
They also have Blue Mountain State, an Ed Marinero vehicle that was a 2010 series that followed the Blue Mountain State Mountain Goats as they navigate their way through the gauntlet of university life, including hazing, sex, alcohol, drugs, and special teams. It's stupid, but it's fun. I'll have to try that one out.
It's got most of what I like there. Yeah, that's you hit all the high points, I would say.
ESPN. Check the boxes. ESPN Plus has a bunch of stuff too. Everybody keeps telling me. I guess I have ESPN Plus. Is ESPN Plus what ESPN Insider used to be?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I have it too. Yeah.
I was annoyed that I had to re-sign up. I'd been on ESPN Insider for a decade, and then all of a sudden one day I couldn't get access to articles, so I had to re-sign up for the exact same thing I'd always been getting just because they changed the title of the. But
they've also. They've also got a package. Disney Plus has a package where you can get Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus for $12. It's pretty good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
To check that out then.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I don't know how into your daughter's a teenager now. I don't know how into the Disney stuff she is anymore, but that's a good subscription for a family because it kind of hits everybody. You know what I mean? You got Disney Plus with a lot of the kids stuff. You got Hulu, which is all the TV shows and everything, and then ESPN Plus, which scratches you right where you itch, Seth Payne.
Are we ever going to get past this era where every movie is a superhero movie? Because, they're great productions, and it's amazing and all that. It's just, I'm not into it. I'm not into the Marvel universe and all that. And I don't judge people who are. I'm just not into it at all. But, man, it seems like that's the only thing they're making anymore. And I know there's other stuff. But, the really good movies and, the really big-budget movies are all the same genre. And I'm getting bored of it, man.
Yeah. Well, the good news is you've got Tiger King to keep you distracted for at least 5 more episodes. Are you going to watch another episode today or 2?
Yeah, I'm going to do, I'll probably try to do 2 today. If I'm committed to the show, I'll watch the remaining 5, I suppose. But I do have a life to try to carry on within the confines of my home.
I reckon. Yeah. No, but if you can squeeze a couple of them in, I can't wait to get to your reaction to a few of the things, but again, don't want to spoil it. For you, Landry and John are up next today on In the Loop. No Sweet 16, no problem. They're going to present In the Loop style Sweet 16 brackets, best current Houston athlete, mixed drinks, Tex-Mex items, sports and historical figures you'd want to be quarantined with, and stoner questions to ponder while quarantined. So it sounds like your standard In the Loop show today. Plus, they have a Deshaun Watson conspiracy and a whole lot more. Seth, I will see you or hear you talk to you tomorrow at 6 a.m.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.